Jim Harbaugh made a promise. I want to get Michigan back to prominence. It all comes to a head Monday night. Because if they're to win this game, I think it says more about their journey than anything else that we can kind of put into it as far as this new age of college football.
Hello and welcome to Always College Football. It is Sunday here in Houston, Texas. NRG Stadium right behind me, the site of the national championship. Michigan and Washington will kick off a little more than 24 hours from right now. We have a lot that we need to do, though, before we get to kickoff. We have tons of shows on the ESPN family of networks tomorrow. We, of course, will be with you after the game on Always College Football, so lock into the ESPN YouTube channel to the podcast. We'll be with you from inside the building, hopefully confetti falling on the field when we tape our segment to talk about what just went down right in front of us. I'll be calling the game on radio as well, so if you want to tune into the radio show, that would be awesome as well. We have a terrific show in store for you today. We're going to have Dan Mullen on. He's going to join us first, then we'll be followed by Booger McFarland. Dan Mullen coached in multiple national championships, called plays in multiple national championships. I want to talk about the thought process that goes into putting the offensive game plan together. And then Booger McFarland won two Super Bowls. He's played against elite quarterbacks in the past. What would he do if he were a defensive tackle for the Michigan Wolverines playing against Michael Penix? And if he were a defensive tackle for Washington, how would he stop the run headlined by Blake Corum? So without much further ado, let's dive in. It's Dan Mullen of ESPN fame, but formerly of the Florida Gators and the Mississippi State Bulldogs. So you've called games in this setting before. You've won it twice as a coordinator. How do you guard against over-preparing, knowing that you have a long layoff?
Well, the one thing these teams now are getting is the short week to get ready for this game. I'm sure they did some previous prep work and getting ready to go. It was the previous game with that long layoff. You have to be really careful. You have to set up a great routine, how you're going to approach it. You're going through a developmental stage first couple of weeks. Then you get into a game week. We always did two game weeks. I like to do a game week. Then the guys would take a little break when they came back or you got to location for the bowl game. Then you're going through the second game week. You're kind of repeating what you've already done. So there's a lot of confidence in there with those players getting ready to go play the game.
So the familiarity with the plan is basically installed. Now this, obviously, we had the semis on Monday. This is a normal week, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but it feels like Kalen DeBoer and Jim Harbaugh have kind of built it up and say we're not treating it like a normal week. So how do you create routine while also embracing the fact that you're playing in a championship?
I think it's the end of the year, though. I mean, when you get to the end of the year, you know, the pads come off. You just played last week. You're very comfortable with what you're going to do. You're going to get into a championship game, and you're also going to look and say, hey, let's not overcomplicate it.
Sure.
Let's do what we do well. Let's not overthink. Make sure the guys that need to touch the ball are touching the ball. And get it in their hands and do what we know so that your guys can play fast and confident. You're on the biggest stage.
Right.
You want your guys not sitting there and being mentally bogged down with changing an entire game plan. You want them playing fast, confident, and enjoying the moment. And to do that, you do that by going back to the basics and running your base offense and defense.
Right. So when you, obviously BCS setting, so a little bit different.
Yeah.
But if you were preparing to play in a championship environment, would you, in the weeks leading up to the semifinal game, maybe put a period or two into your practice preparations on, let's say, let's just use the example, if you're Michigan, did you practice any Texas Washington in the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to just give you a little bit of a head start?
I don't know if you're practicing it, but I'm sure there's a game plan. There is a group of guys that are in there and assistant coaches that are going to sit there and say, okay, let's get our notes together because of the quick turnaround. We want to have our notes. We want to have our base plan. So when we turn around after the semifinal game, we are prepared with what we're going to do and get that information to the players as fast as possible.
That's awesome. I've always been fascinated by what goes on. Because as players, we don't know. It's like you call the play, I run the play, right? But you guys, there's always a method to the madness. Now, Mac, kind of looking at this matchup in particular, let's start with Washington's offense attacking Michigan's defense. If you were calling the plays and you were Ryan Grubb, how do you try to take advantage of an aggressive group up front and some pretty good cover guys?
Well, one of the things when you get into this game, you sat there. I remember doing it in the playing Ohio State in the BCS National Championship game. Urban Meyer came down. I said, hey, here's our script and our openers. And he kind of was shocked. And I said, well, we didn't come here to be conservative. We're going to let this rip and go. And I think that's what they want to do. And I think the coaches will do that. And if you see that, we're going to sit there and say, hey, we're going to respect what they do. But when you watch Washington, they throw the ball deep as good as anybody in the country.
Yeah.
But they don't just get in one formation and one protection to do it. You're going to watch Michael Penix early in the game. They're going to do it in a five-man protection, six-man protection, seven-man protection, and then they're going to boot and move the pocket to take shots down the field. And I think one of the things they can have confidence in, we saw the Michigan defense get after Alabama, five sacks in the first half.
Yeah.
Michael Penix has been sacked 11 times on the entire season. Why? Because he gets rid of the ball. He has the experience. He's not afraid to throw it away. He's not afraid to check it down. But when you give him the opportunity, he's going to take it deep down the field. It will be interesting on the side of Michigan to see what they do. When you watch them earlier in the year, when they pressure, they'll play man and get up on you and play pressure. When you go back to that last game against Alabama, they played a lot of cover three, off cover three to try to confuse Jalen Milroe. I don't think you're going to be able to confuse Michael Penix. The experience he has, the veteran player, been around a long time, he's going to look and say, okay, you're going to run cover three. I'm just going to throw some curl flats until you jump on it. We'll throw a hitch out into the flat.
Sure.
You start jumping on it, now we'll get the double move. Okay? Or if you're going to play in a cover three, as you know, you'll see him. We're going to max protect, try to clear two guys out on one side of the field and run a deep crosser coming across the field. But to do that, we'll max protect or move the pocket to give him more time to go do it. So that's going to be interesting. And I'm sure on the flip side, you look at the Michigan defense, and they're saying, hey, he has only been sacked 11 times. Hey, keep it in front of you. We're going to get after him. We're going to hit him. We're not going to give him the time to throw the ball deep down the field.
So you just make a play offense, and if you can keep it in front, maybe he'll take an unnecessary risk and catch one. Is that kind of the thought process?
Well, that's what it is. And does Washington have the patience?
Yeah. Right.
They like to go deep.
Yeah.
They have the patience to sit there and say, you're not going to let us deep. We're just going to keep taking it underneath all day. Or will they start getting antsy and say, we need to launch some deep down the field? And when that happens, now you got to protect, and now the pressure gets after you.
Well, in the event in which, our red zone, for example, and I think this game naturally, I mean, touchdowns are going to win this football game. Field goals are, knowing both offenses are capable, I have a hard time envisioning field goals being the deciding factor. But when you look at the red zone in particular, if they can't stretch the field vertically because the field's condensed and they can't run the ball because Dylan Johnson's not at 100%, how do they move the ball?
Well, not sure you're going to say, like, you got to like Jack Westover. I'm excited about him in this game because he's not the star power guy.
Right.
But the thing that makes offenses go is, who are they going to try to take away? Okay, they're going to start take away Roma Dunze. Then we're going to go get Jalen Polk. But we got to keep an eye on Jalen McMillan because he can score from anywhere. He's so electric.
Right.
And all eyes on them. And then you have a guy like a Jack Westover whose catch radius is unbelievable. You get down in the red zone. You see like third and twos, third and threes. Sure. They're throwing the ball in his direction all the time. And he's a guy that can go score down in the red zone. And the thing that makes Washington dangerous is, you always talk about it. You watch games. Whenever you watch a football game or you watch a team, you want to know who can score touchdowns.
Yeah.
Hey, we can drive the ball. We have all these offensive stats. Someone on your team has to score touchdowns. Washington has multiple guys that can do it, which helps in those situations because you don't have to just eliminate one. You have to eliminate about five different guys that all score touchdowns.
Yeah. All their tight ends get involved in the pass game down in the red zone. I mean, even 88, you know, Quentin Moore, he's the blocker. But, hey, we'll sneak him out and bust him into the flat. Let's go to the other side with Michigan's offense. I imagine the recipe's simple, like power football, get some inside-outside zone, but – probably going to run J.J. some. What if Washington can hold up in the run game like so many people think they can't? What if they can? Then how does Michigan beat them?
Well, that's where it gets a little bit scary. Now, I was impressed in the semifinals. I thought Alabama would be able to eliminate the receivers of Michigan on the outside.
Yeah.
They were going to load the box and say, okay, we can cover these guys one-on-one. They weren't able to do that. There were some explosive plays. And you look at Roman Wilson, puts the ball in the end zone. He scores not huge touchdowns, not a lot of catches, but a lot of touchdowns.
Sure.
You know, when you look at the whole season of work. So I think they're going to try. They will commit to the run completely. And then can J.J. McCarthy do it? In the semifinal game against Alabama, the biggest question I had is, okay, now there's 4 minutes left. J.J. McCarthy, It's not going to be an 8-minute drive. There's 4 minutes left in the game, and he's got to lead a drive down the field to score. And he did it. And there's times he makes some poor decisions out there on the field. You see him, some questionable throws. But when the biggest moment in the game was on the line, he was able to lead that team down the field, lead the drive, and win the game.
Is there more in there than what we've seen? Like, you're a great evaluator of talent. You have found multiple ways to use guys like Nick Fitzgerald, Dak Prescott, Tim Tebow. You have found multiple ways to bring out the best in that particular player. I don't know how you do it, because some of those guys, I'm like, there's no way that guy could throw it. And sure enough, Nick Fitzgerald hits you for a big one. Is there more in the tank than what maybe the average fan thinks of J.J. McCarthy?
I think there is. And I think Jim Harbaugh is a great developer of quarterbacks as well, and played the position. So I think this, he's going to look at J.J. and is a great, I love the everyone loves the term game manager, right?
Of course.
I love it. That's all I want. But to me, the game manager at the quarterback position means you need to do whatever we need for the team to win. Hey, JJ, we're going to put the game on your back. You might need to throw it 50 times for 400 yards. Okay? And everyone's like, oh, okay, that's a great game. He managed the game.
Sure.
He did what they, hey, we might need you to run it. We might need you to just check us into the right play and let Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards just pound away all day long at him, and complete a couple of third downs to get us down the field and a deep shot to keep him honest. That's what he does. And I think he does do a really good job of that. And I think when you have a coach and a quarterback that are on the same page, when you look at Michigan play, he understands that. He understands I don't have to try to impress and force the ball to throw it all the time. They're going to let me. I will make the plays to help this team win. And that's what you want from the quarterback position. And I think last week he showed there's multiple ways he can do it. He can do it throwing, he can do it running, or he can just, you know, a lot during the season we've just seen him turn and hand the ball off.
Yeah.
And he can do it that way too and not get flustered or force the team into mistakes. They make very few mistakes.
Very few.
and that starts to me at the quarterback position. He's the guy walking in that huddle, tell him this is how it's going to be. He gets everybody on the same page. They don't have penalties, they don't turn the ball over, they don't make mistakes, and that comes from him.
Yeah, it's been so fun to watch. They're a coach's dream to me. Physical as can be, like pound the football, occasional weapons on the outside, get them going. So
it's a Greg McElroy offense.
Which is why I probably like it so much.
Have you ever dreamed of hitting the road in your very own customized Mercedes-Benz Sprinter? Follow college football all season long by hitting all the biggest games in college football's most celebrated stadiums. At ESPN, we dreamed that dream, and with the help of Mercedes-Benz, we made it happen. This year, our very own Jen Latta has teamed up with Mercedes-Benz designers to create a road-ready, fully functional, state-of-the-art podcast studio on wheels. The ride is pure Mercedes-Benz, with all-wheel drive and the latest driver assistance, safety, and tech. The podcast studio must be seen and heard to be believed. A spacious and chill conversation space with mics, camera, and mixing board to capture the action. On board, Jen Latta will be interviewing some of the biggest names in college football. All points to Mercedes-Benz for always bringing some extra. Out back of the Sprinter, they're innovating, pushing the science of the tailgate, complete with grill, cooler, TV monitors, and more. This is hashtag van life meets the fan life. To get an inside look to this one-of-a-kind, blow-your-mind collaboration came together, visit mbvans.com/sprinterlabs. The Mercedes-Benz ESPN College Football Podcast Sprinter, coming soon to a game near you. Every college football season, Goodyear knows the importance of winning on the road. The road will always demand confidence. The confidence to handle whatever the journey brings and to perform under tough conditions. And just like the players and fans of college football, Goodyear is ready. Are you ready for the road? Visit Goodyear.com to find the right Goodyear tires for whatever road you're on this season. Goodyear, more driven.
Now joined by Booger McFarland. Booger's obviously everywhere for ESPN. His best role is alongside Boomer on Sunday NFL Countdown.
Yeah, that's fun.
You enjoy that?
You know what? It's cool, man, because obviously, just like you, I grew up watching that show with him and Tom Jackson. And so when the call came, hey, do you want to – because it was originally supposed to be me filling in for Tom
Yeah.
because of COVID. And then just kind of one thing led to another. Tom kind of backed away, and they told me I could keep it. And I just let Boomer talk, and when he decides to breathe, I jump in.
Well, let's get into this game a little bit, because I know that this will be music to your ears, and it probably won't surprise you. I think this is a line of scrimmage game. Yeah. And this game in particular is going to be determined by whether or not Michigan's defensive line can put pressure on Penix, and whether or not Michigan's offense can run the football against Washington's defensive front. I mean, am I missing something there?
Well, if we know that, then the coaches have to know that.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, the best coaches, I remember Bill Belichick. You know, the reason he's a Hall of Fame coach and has won, I don't know, six Super Bowls as a head coach, and I think another four or five as an assistant, is they always take what you do best and take it away. And, you know, Jim Harbaugh's a good coach. Kalen DeBoer's a good coach. So at some point, you got to say, Washington is not going to let Michigan just line up and run it over them. Somehow they're going to figure out a way, because stopping the run is a numbers game. So somehow they're going to figure out a way to have more numbers that Michigan can block. And on the flip side, Jim Harbaugh is going to figure out a way, I'm not going to allow Michael Penix to just sit back there. Jesse Minter is going to come up with some scheme, whether it's zone pressures, whether it's quarters coverage, whether it's too deep, some exotic blitz scheme, to not allow the quarterback to be comfortable and get pressure on him. I just think it's going to be the adjustment at halftime. So these guys are going to come into this game with a wrinkle that the other hasn't seen. And then who goes in at halftime and makes the adjustment? To me, I think this is going to be a second half game.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to be a blowout because I think these coaches are too good to put their players in adverse situations.
If you were Michigan's defensive line, and Penix isn't a guy that's going to take off. I mean,
correct,
he might have six, seven scrambles all year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a lot. They do have the occasional design run, but not, they don't live in it. Big game like this, though, maybe they have a little more. What are you thinking as a defensive tackle playing against an offense like that?
Ball's coming out quick.
Yeah.
If we're going to do some type of zone pressure, I know that I'm going to have time because the zone pressure is going to be designed to make him hold the football. And by zone pressure, I mean we're going to make him think there's a blitz, but we're really only rushing four.
Yeah.
Simulated pressure.
Sure.
Very similar to what the Baltimore Ravens do.
Right.
And, you know, Jesse Minter's from that Baltimore Ravens tree. And so I think when you look at it as a defensive lineman, I'm going to know what calls that are going to give me a little extra time to get there. Because, I mean, Texas did a very poor job. No sacks, no pressure. I mean, no one he threw for 430 yards. They couldn't get to him. I want to know, when do I have time to get there? When is he going to pat the football? When is he going to hold it? And then I'm going to try to take my chances during that time.
They have some screens, though. Like, they'll mix in some screens, too, to kind of keep you guessing.
Screens
they'll
not
change
gonna
the
me,
launch
though.
Point.
So screens aren't going to beat me. It's that McMillan, Polk, Odunze fella that's going to beat me.
Understandable. So you would basically, hey, keep it in front, let the front four get after them, see if you can confuse them some with disguises. And
I want to know how patient they are.
Yeah.
There have been a couple of times this season where Washington gets very impatient.
Very impatient.
Like it's third and two and they're throwing go balls.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at some point, can we get the first down?
Yeah.
And so is that offense going to show up? They also go through stretches in games where they don't move the football.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll go three, four drives, well, it's three and out, three and out, three and out, and then all of a sudden they come back and hit you for four straight TD drives.
Yeah.
So I want to know, can I get them in a situation where I can take advantage of them? You know this. Typically a team has 10 to 12 possessions.
Yeah.
If you're Michigan, can you get them to 9?
Yeah.
Can you get them to 8 by running the football? And when you get them to 9 or get them to 8, do they become impatient? If they do, then I think we got them where they want to. I think this is the tempo game. If this game is played in the mid to high 30s, Washington wins. If this game is played in the teens or low 20s, I think it's a Michigan-type game.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. Looking at the other side, and Michigan's a team that obviously wants to run the football. They got pullers. They got extra blockers.
Yeah.
They got big tight ends. They have multiple sets. If you were trying to defend this rushing attack, they're going to make you wrong. Like, if you're guessing, you can't really two-gap them because they're too dang big.
You don't.
So
you don't.
How do you stop the run?
Stopping the run is just like going to elementary school. It's math. It's 2 + 2 = 4. If they have five guys to block, I got to have a sixth guy that's going to be a free hitter to make the ball carrier do something. Like stopping a run is not like this great formula, man. It's simple math. And what you have to be able to live with, though, if you're going to devote the extra guy to the run game, are you willing to line up and say, okay, I'm going to allow Wilson and Johnson to be one-on-one outside? If you're Washington, I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. And so I'd bring the safety down in the box. I do what we used to do in Tampa. I do line stunts movement because anytime you have teams that want to come downhill and go with the double teams, you want to allow your defensive tackles to move, not have to take those double teams all day. Give them a little break by having some movement, some pirate stunts, some stick stunts, maybe blitz the linebacker in the A-gap, anything to throw the math off because, again, blocking the run game is simple math. So I got to think they're going to do some movement. They're going to have run blitzes. They're going to have run stunts. And at the end of the day, they got to bow up, man.
Yeah.
Like, this is still a physical game where you got to man up, and it's about beating a defender or beating an offender in front of you.
Would you be aggressive if you, knowing that your offense has been really good this year and you might have to force the issue, if you're Washington's defense, would you be overly aggressive, or would you just kind of play ball control and figure it
out? I'm going to feel it out early on. The first drive of the game, if it's 5, 6, 7, 10, 12 yards a carry, I got to switch it up. If they come out, it's 3 and out the first drive of the game, all right. Let's see what happens the second drive.
Yeah.
Then let's go to the third drive. I'm not going to panic until I have to.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the approach you got to have. Like, there's really no need to send everybody if you don't have to. I got to see if my guys can hold up. And I think we will know in the first 5 minutes of the game on both sides of the football. We will know whether or not the opposing defense can hold up. We're going to know whether Washington, because they've said all along, they've even been in my mentions, we can play big boy football. Okay, we're going to find out early on.
Yeah.
And Michigan, we've said they got the number one defense in America. We know Will Johnson, his QBR against is like 5 or whatever the number is. All the numbers.
Yeah.
But if I get you in a one-on-one situation with Rome out there, can you handle it? Because if I see it, I'm checking to it and I'm going deep.
Right.
And I want to see, are you going to panic? And so it's a lot of little matchups that are going to take place early on that if I'm a coach, I want to see how my players react. I think I have a guess that I know, but I'm not really going to know until the ball's in the air.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that cat and mouse for sure. And last one before we get you out of here. If Michigan wins,
yes,
they are not the modern-day blueprint for college football.
Right.
It feels like Washington is more the modern-day blueprint. Like, you got a great quarterback. You got elite wide receivers. Mm-hmm. You can push the ball all the way over the field. Like, you take advantage of every particular – maybe you're not great, not elite defensively, but still good. I think they're fine defensively, and I think they're actually vastly underrated. But if Michigan wins, is that kind of signaling maybe a reversion back to the type of teams that won championships in the 90s and the early 2000s?
No, I don't think so, because I don't think the game is going back that way. This isn't going to be the norm. This is kind of the anomaly. And this Michigan team has kind of been built this way, and the conference they play in allowed them to be built this way, to be physical. Not super explosive, play great defense, run the football, ball control. Well, they don't go against too many offenses in the Big Ten that can put up 40 a game. So they don't have to get to 40. They can live getting to 20 or 17 and beat most teams in the Big Ten except that team they played the last game of the season. So if they, when this new Big Ten changes and now you get in Washington, you get in Oregon, and those offenses put up 30 or 40, I don't think consistently week in and week out when they play those big games, they're going to be able to play 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And so, to your point, I think this will be the culmination of a three-year run for this iteration of Michigan. They knock on the door, they get beat by Georgia. They knock on the door, they get beat by TCU. They get back in. Those guys work out. Those guys come back. All those guys continue to be part of a veteran-laden team. You finally beat Alabama. When everybody said that you were only a one-point favorite, some people said it was a pick 'em type game. And now, can all the heartbreak they've had against Georgia, against TCU, in years and years past, Jim Harbaugh made a promise. I want to get Michigan back to prominence. It all comes to a head Monday night. Because if they're to win this game, I think it says more about their journey than anything else that we can kind of put into it as far as this new age of college football.
Yeah, it'll be awesome, man. It'll be a great game. You have a lean? Which way you lean? You don't have to tell us yet if you don't want to.
I learned a long time ago, and I'll put it this way, because I was changing my mind about how football is played.
Yeah.
You know, back when the Denver played Seattle in the Super Bowl,
right?
When Manning, they were averaging 50 a game, offense is taking over, defense can no longer win.
Yeah.
And Seattle shut that team down. It's a lot easier, Greg, to play great defense than it is to play great offense. Great offense, it takes 11 guys being in unison. Great defense, it takes one guy every play. I'm always leaning toward the greater defense. Michigan has the best defense. I'm going to lean Michigan. How they win, I don't know, but I changed my mind against Seattle and Denver, and I'm never going back. Great defense will beat a great offense any day of the week.
It didn't hurt to play that game in, like, windy, freezing, cold rain in New York either.
It was 52 and no wind, if I remember.
No, I remember it very differently. Booger McFarland, the great Booger McFarland of ESPN, joining us here on Always College Football.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, Who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Couple news and notes before we part ways. Malachi Nelson has transferred from USC to Boise State. A lot of people very surprised. Former number one overall player, according to some recruiting services, has now chosen to go the G5 route as opposed to the P5 route. Now, I don't know the significance of this. Will he immediately start at Boise? I think it's in all likelihood, I'd say yes. This might be the new path, though. If you don't start early at a P5, you go to the G5, you start, then maybe you reassess after 1 year. Do you stay at that particular school, given the success that you've had, or do you potentially have other doors that open at other places so you can cash in by way of NIL down the road? But either way, a significant move for Boise State. It's terrific. Very excited to see what the program looks like. It's a proud program. This will be a terrific move for Malachi Nelson. Malik Nabers, the runner-up in the Biletnikoff Award, has decided to go to the NFL. He just had one of the best receiving years in LSU history, and given the players that have come through LSU at that position in the past, that's certainly saying something. He's a terrific player, great run to catch. I think he'll be an excellent pro as well. And then Bryce Underwood, the number one overall player in the 2025 class, has decided to commit to LSU, a significant get for Brian Kelly. You just had the Heisman Trophy winner. You've had some upheaval at your offensive coordinator spot, still at the moment trying to figure out who's going to replace Mike Denbrock, who opted to return to Notre Dame. We'll see exactly who that is, but either way, to land the number one overall player without an offensive coordinator is pretty dang impressive. So congrats to LSU, congrats to Bryce Underwood, and congrats to Brian Kelly. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. I continue to ask all of you to like, to rate, and to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. You can also subscribe to the ESPN College Football YouTube channel. That would be great. Hit that thumbs up right below if you are watching on the YouTube channel. So we appreciate you guys so much, and we will continue to fill it up with plenty of content if you follow our social media channels at AlwaysCFB and at Greg McElroy. So for all of us here at Always College Football, our terrific local television crew here who's taping this and is braving the miserable 52-degree, I guess we could call it cold. We're soft in Texas, ladies and gentlemen. We are soft. But this is freezing for Houston, and I am ice cold right now, so I'm going to get out of here on this. For all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, the other Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have a terrific day. Happy National Championship Eve. We'll see you tomorrow here on Always College Football.